I am glad you're here this evening as we begin this study, Pressure Points by Chip Henderson. And some of you have found some of this in your Sunday school literature, and they didn't tell us that was going to happen. One class, anyway, has found this. This is actually a small group study based in the letter of James. And so as we begin this evening, I do want to invite you to turn to James. There will be some other places to which we will go as well. Yes, there are some Bibles up there if you would like one. If you don't have one, if you don't have it memorized. And I don't, so. James. Yes. James chapter 1. Did you pick yours up, Melissa? Is there anyone in here that would not agree that the world in which we live, and in fact many of our lives, are spent basically in a pressure cooker? Seems to be getting more and more pressure filled even as the days go by. And that's not just those who might be living in other parts of the world, or those who might be working in a high-stress job. What are some of the stresses that are out there? Some of the pressures that make life feel like sometimes we're living in a pressure cooker even today?
I don't know, but I'd say I wouldn't play like many 18-year-olds, but I don't think what they've got to go through now versus what we have to go through. The peer pressures, what all the automation is doing and everything. I don't have a computer. I'm not getting one. And the government's still...
Yes, you do.
...my identity stole down there at Columbia, and I'm still living about that.
Oh, I know. But I would suggest you do have a computer.
This one?
Yeah.
It's not working
very well. between your ears.
Constantly on that.
I just feel
the stress of what's happening today. When I was around, it was a prop job. Now we've gone from rocket ships to spaceships and zip past the jet age and everything else. Man, when you go into buy anything in a store, when you come out with it, it's outdated.
Well, a lot of times, I don't want to add anything, any pressure at all, but if you have one of these things and do not turn it completely off, when you walk into some of the major retailers, they have spyware that's installed in the thing that picks up and it monitors where you stop and linger. In fact, I had somebody Mary told me recently that one of her coworkers said, oh, that's how she does her Christmas shopping. She will go, as it approaches, she'll go into certain stores and stop, and then the manufacturer or the store sends coupons for a certain percentage off the items where she's been stopping and looking. So she leaves her phone on. But there are major retailers, if you don't shut this off, they know what you're looking at when you are in their store.
Well, people wonder why ID theft is so easy, too. I've tried to remain in the cave and everything else, and I just can't do it. They find this, and they find that, and everything else.
What?
And you get these infomercial calls and that sort of telephones, what have you.
Well, now it's... Yeah, well, there is nothing wrong with your credit card ending in such and such. Wait a minute, I don't have one that ends in that. So. But, so there are lots of trials. There are lots of temptations. What kind of other pressures just kind of squeeze the joy out of life? Sometimes it's hard to live a joyful life these days, isn't it? Well, yeah. I understand having to work when you really don't want to and having to work more than you really want to. People, especially women who have children and work and have to do everything else. That's right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That is a major stress, a major pressure that just kind of squeezes. And the time sometimes that you even have with family and in particular with children, it's almost that in itself is just an additional few degrees in the pressure cooker, because you've got to suddenly do all of these things and still get this done. Yeah. Well, you got two girls. When David and Kristen revealed last Sunday that they're having a little girl, even though I thought that's what they were having, everybody had to sign whether you want. And it's interesting that all the grandparents and Sydney and a couple of aunts said girl, and all the siblings and all the cousins said boy. But when they did, I said, "Dave, yeah." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah. Congratulations on all those dresses, proms, the wedding." But now the only good thing there is half of a closet of stuff still with tags on it that Sydney never wore. So. Yeah, Grandmary does all that kind of stuff, yes. Granddad occasionally buys things. But,
One thing that's not necessarily staring in the face all the time, but in the back of your mind, through the ages, through wars and pestilence and whatever, you pretty much guarantee that the world is still be there. Nowadays, that's all about the beginning of the common day. We haven't had that yet, so we're still in the doctor's way to where we're in that.
And what makes it even more of a pressure cooker is when we think about what's going on in the Middle East right now. And we have family and friends who are somewhere out there. Are there trials which you've dealt with and found that searching with an attitude of joy made a difference? Either made it positive or made it at least tolerable? Working when you don't want to. I think there's a theme here for Francis. Well, the letter of James is written in a time period in which there was great persecution, and it was like a pressure cooker for the folks, and not just the Christian church, but for all kinds of folks. Roman occupation. At least Judaism was a recognized religion by the Roman Empire, not so Christianity. In fact, in A.D. 49, the Emperor Claudius ran Jewish Christians out of Rome. Then you come along later and you got that wonderful party guy, Nero, who, according to both Suetonius and Tacitus, Suetonius claims, Roman historian Suetonius claims that actually the fires that burned Rome, some of Nero's captains were seen setting them. I call it part of Nero's urban renewal project. But Tacitus writes that he used to set people on fire, tie them to poles while they were still alive, and set them on fire to serve as torches for the night while his parties could go on. And Nero would also have Christians gathered up, taken in the Colosseum, have wild animal skins tied to them, and in turn loose packs of dogs, while everybody cheered for the dogs. So it was a pressure cooker then too. Persecution on top of what happens if you are in certain occupations or you're working for someone who worships a Roman employer that worships the emperor, and suddenly you come in and tell them that you decided that you're going to follow this one Christus, that you're becoming a Christian. What happens then in many cases? So long, farewell, our feet are saying goodbye. Yeah, you were gone. You were gone. You lost a job. You had difficulties in all kinds of areas of life. And so it was very hard sometimes to have any sense of true joy or any true sense of not just joy but comfort because of all the things that went around and were going on. And therefore, we come to chapter 1 of the letter to James. By the way, contrary to the writer, and sometimes I'll say these things, sometimes not, contrary to this writer, James was not the first letter written to a church, although he says it seems that James was probably the first letter written to a church. James is probably somewhere between 57 and 80. Wide range, depending on who James was. Depending on which James actually wrote this epistle. Whether it was James, the brother of Jesus, or James, who was James the Lesser, or James the Just, or someone else named James that was in the church in the area around Jerusalem. Anywhere from earliest would be 57. Latest would be about AD 80. But in that time period, you've got Claudius, you've got Nero, you've got all kinds of issues that create pressure. And you've got Christians who are being compared by this Jewish Christian writer to the 12 tribes who had been dispersed in the Old Testament period. Dispersed, and the dispersion oftentimes meant exile, scattered in exile. So if James, even if James is written in 57, the first thing Paul wrote, the first letter he wrote was 1 Thessalonians, that's 50 to 51. James is really writing more of a sermon in this letter, trying to encourage people to look at all the pressures and the different ways pressures come. We've talked about some of those things with jobs and other kinds of things. But as we go through the next several weeks, there are the pressures of temptation, of showing partiality, the pressures of words, what we say, what is said to us, what we think, conflict, retaliation. We have all of those things. In fact, we worry really a lot about conflict and retaliation in the world today, don't we? Saw a headline on the news yesterday that Iran, that wondrous place that was ruled by Ahmadinejad. That's what Jay Leno said years ago. If you can't pronounce the name Ahmadinejad, just say Ahmadinejad. You'd be close enough. But Iran now says if we attack Syria, they're going to retaliate against friends of ours. Because Syria is one of their friends, supposedly. So what about retaliation? How do we deal with these things when the pressure builds and we want to strike back? So a lot for us to talk about over the next several weeks. If someone would read James chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Thank you. Instead of calling somebody, it's interesting. I always wait for somebody to... The first person that shifted their Bible didn't say a word. Paige. I thought you were getting ready to read. That's okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, James, a servant, or literally, and the translation that you read, Betty, captures it. Literally, the Greek word is doulos, a slave. A slave. One who has a master, recognizes that master, and recognizes everything they are, everything they do, belongs to that master. It's not just a servant who's necessarily being paid to do a particular job, and oh, you did it well, so kudos, but it's someone who owes their very existence to their master. What James is trying to get at here is that he counts it joy, the fact that he has such a master as God, that his ultimate master is God, and that he is glad to be enslaved to God because he recognizes that God is the ultimate who will comfort and care and who will give him guidance. And so he starts out here, you know, James, a slave, a doulos of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. He's writing to the 12 tribes in the dispersion. So he is identifying as well with those churches, those persons in the churches to whom he's writing, because they feel like slaves, probably not as much to God sometimes as they do to the taskmaster over them. And so he says, you know, I'm writing this, and we identify together, and you should identify And part of what he will do in here is later on he'll talk about Abraham and Rahab and some others. He's trying to get them to look back into history and recognize that the pressures they're feeling are pressures, while they may be coming in some ways from different areas, everyone throughout history has felt their lives at points in time being pushed and pressured. And if they would look to some of these and remember that they still have that heritage with the 12 tribes that God has taken care of and provided for, then they too can find ways through these various pressures, these pressure points. And I don't know if that really why, if that's why he named it that, but we talk about pressure points, and pressure points can be good or bad, can't they? How can a pressure point be good? It can stop bleeding. Yeah, I mean, a pressure point can be good if someone is beginning to hemorrhage and you got the right pressure point. If someone cuts open an artery and you find the right pressure point, the application of pressure there can be a good thing. It can help to seal things off, at least for the time being. The best $250 that was ever spent when I had a heart cath was the second time, because I don't like lying on my back. And I can't sleep lying on my back. It's always been on my side or my stomach. But the second heart cath I ever had, they said, okay, you got to lay here about an hour, and then you can move around slowly, and you can go home. And I said, well, last time I had to wait, lay here for 8 hours and couldn't even pick up my head. And I said it like that, 8 hours and couldn't even pick up my head. And I said, oh, well, this time we used a little collagen plug, and we put that down in there, and it sealed off the artery. And as long as you don't do something to disrupt that, it's going to do just fine, and it'll eventually dissolve. And I said, oh. I said, how much was that? They said, $250. I said, best $250 I spent today. So pressure points can be good. Are there other ways that pressure points can be good, or pressures can be good? Sometimes a pressure point of a deadline. How can pressure points be bad?
Deadline.
Or pressure that pushes you over the edge. Or you can actually do harm by applying pressure when it's not needed to an artery. Wrestlers make their living doing it, or they used to, right? But applying pressure and somebody passes out. So you know, pressure points can be good and pressure points can be bad. And here he talks about some of that pressure, the pressure of being a slave to anyone or to something. People get enslaved to all kinds of things, even if they work or don't work. Well, excuse me, even if they get paid for working or don't get paid for working. There's still pressures, and we can become enslaved to things, right? I know somebody that if it's not Fox News, it's QVC and a UPS truck stops 2 or 3 times a week. Enslaved. So pressure can be good, and pressure points can be good, but they can also be bad. And so he writes here, and he says, you know, I'm writing to you, and what's really interesting is he says, greetings, the word greeting. It's kind of like, hi, how are you? I'm really glad to see you. The word greeting in Greek is charon. Okay? It's a joyful greeting, because then he says, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but charon. Joy. Same basic word. You should greet even the pressures and the trials with joy. Tough. I don't. Don't like to. Don't know if anybody else in here does. But he says, yeah. Oh, boy. Well, that's true, Susan. I think you were crazy. But some people would see. Yeah. Well, a paramedic might see that and say yay, because they say, hey, man, I can do something and help, right? But that's true. You can have kind of a warped way of looking at it. But whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy. Trials. What is a trial? What happens with trials? Well, not a I'm not talking about a courtroom trial. Okay, you can grow through them. Are trials things that you normally expect to happen? No, they're things that generally, they're like a pop test. I had a colleague at another institution one time who used to, every Friday was pop test Friday, and I said, Bill, that's not a pop test. Well, at least they'll be ready. I said, yeah, but the whole point of a pop test is the pressure of, whoop, it pops up and grabs you. But you're not putting as much pressure on them. But trials are things that generally we don't expect. Well, that's true. 911 at 3 a.m. That's not something you expect to do. So, yeah, there are things that we don't. So he says, when you face these trials, parasmos, same word also means temptation. Temptations can be trials as well. They can come along when we're not expecting them. Oftentimes, temptations do that. At least in the early stages, when we are tempted, it's stuff that pops up and we don't expect it. And all of a sudden, we've got to make a split decision. And then, well, which one do I do? Trials or temptations? When you face trials, consider it nothing but joy, because you know the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. Trials, unexpected things, they surround us. And trials are inevitable, are they not? It's not really a question of if we're going to face trials, and it's not really a question of if we're going to face temptations. In fact, but some people are so fearful that they refuse to live their lives. Why? Because of the pressure of the possibility we might face a trial or a temptation. And we might not know how to handle it, or we might handle it the wrong way. Instead of preparing ourselves as best as possible so that perhaps we handle it in a good way. Why are people afraid of trials and temptations? Because we're afraid of the unknown, but we're also afraid that we might not handle it right. What if I make a mistake? Those kinds of things. There are all kinds of trials. As the book writer says, there are all kinds of trials. There are temptations, enticements. There is sickness. Is anyone here that doesn't know the trial that comes with an unexpected illness or sickness? And not necessarily our own sickness. In fact, how many times are we more worried about that child that gets sick, or that spouse that gets sick, or that parent that gets sick, than we are ourselves? Mentioned this morning, we don't face a whole lot of persecution, but then again, in risky business, perhaps we do, because persecution can come in any form. When we generally think of persecution, what do we think of? People being persecuted for their faith. What do people do to them? They kill them. They torture them. What about ridicule and laughter? And sometimes we're afraid to face those things because we might be ridiculed or laughed at, or we might not have the answer, as I said earlier today. That's a temptation and a trial. Tempted not to. Loneliness can be a trial, can it not? Any kind of trouble can do that to us. And so the author says what we should do is, the author of James says what we should do then when we face those things is to count it or consider it nothing but joy. Interesting word here, consider. There are all kinds of offshoots of this particular word in the Greek text. Consider. Analogizomai means to sum up. Dialogizomai means to calculate carefully and argue. Logizomai means to recon or count. And it's the same word from which we would find logizomai. If we consider carefully and we count something and we prepare an argument, we're using logic. So think about these things. Even logically, it's about thinking on the temptation or the trial or the difficulty, not about feeling. We can still feel scared. We can still feel like we're being overwhelmed. But part of what he is saying to overcome this and to find some place for joy, even in the middle of the clouds and the crowds, is to consider, to think, not just feel, but to think. Anathēoreo means to carefully examine. And it's similar to consider. It's also translated consider. Anathēoreo. What's in the middle of that? Theo. Theos. To consider carefully. To think through carefully. And for the Christian, it would be to think through carefully as to think as God would have us think, or as God would think. And so he says, consider this. Think about this. So when we face difficulties, when we face pressure, instead of immediately reacting, and I know that's tough sometimes, I drive in a pressure cooker. Because there are people out there that don't know how to drive. Or at least they don't know how to get where they're going quickly enough. And then there are others that get there too quickly. Get speeding tickets. But oftentimes, oftentimes I react, blow my horn when I go by them finally. Well, I talk to them. I wish I had a microphone so they could hear. Are you going to drive or park in the middle of the road? But to think, not to use feelings. That's a reaction based on feeling. It's not a reaction based on thought, rational thought. But what the author here is saying, when any trial comes, when any temptation comes, no matter how great or how small it may be in our lives, instead of reacting out of emotion and feeling, the first thing we should do is to consider, to think. What has brought this on? What are the potentials, good and bad, and how do we get there? But then again, I have been becoming more and more convinced, as I often say, especially in Bible studies on Wednesdays, that fewer and fewer people in the world today really want to think. And as I've said several times recently, in Wednesday morning and a couple of Sunday nights and the other Sunday on Sunday morning, all these people that say, oh, we want a New Testament church, a New Testament church, a New Testament church, really don't want a New Testament church because the New Testament church had to think. James made them think. Writer of Hebrews, James is full of a lot of meaty stuff. It really is. Hebrews will make your head hurt even worse. It's so deep. But even there, it's consider things. Look at them. You may not necessarily go this way, but at least consider it so you know why you go another way or not. Yes, Susan? No. That would... A lot of folks would say that's irrational and that's not logical. Or is that the irrational thing is to express it as opposed to think it through and find out why and is there a better way?
I think there's some of those there, but yeah. I think Christianity a lot is not always that.
No. But belief may not be. Faith, I think, really looks more to logic and how I live it out as opposed to a belief system. I used to frustrate students like crazy because I'd say, they'd go to something and say, well, what about? I'd say, well, but that's part of the mystery. Hey, one student said, there you go talking about the mystery again. I said, well, yeah. Same student that said that one day they were going to find out exactly what the first spark was. I said, well, good. I hope I'm there. And they said, really? I said, yeah, because then my question to you is, okay, what caused that first spark? Or what tipped over that first domino? Right. The legislators. No. But, yeah, true. But you are right. It seems irrational because we think the rational thing to do is to react. Yet, that's our logic, but James would argue, and I think Hebrews would argue too, that in God's logic, is it rational for God to forgive us all the things that we sometimes do as God does? Well, not from our point of view. But then again, in the mind of God, that may be the only logical, rational thing to truly do. So there's the mystery again. Right. Well, especially when he's old. Sarah's 10 years younger than he is, and he doesn't have any kids. And then Sarah concocts this. Well, actually, she doesn't concoct it. She is going. It was a socially acceptable thing if you had a female slave and you had no kids to give that female slave to your husband to have children for you, and because you own that slave, lock, stock, and barrel, including ovaries and first rights on any future, you know, pro football players or anything. But he would see God's stuff as not being logical and rational, and yet, in the scheme of things, who knows? But we're to consider, to think about things, instead of just reacting. And yes, sometimes that does seem irrational, because we want to react. But the logical thing, according to James, the logical thing for us to do is to at least pause long enough to consider. Now, we may still blow a gasket, but at least sit there and to consider, to think it through. What about this trial? What are the different things about the pressures here? Because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Endurance comes from hupomone, which means to endure patiently. It's not just, well, I guess I got to put up with it, but to endure with patience. The Greek word hupomone, which we translate endurance, means to endure it with patience. And James, I think, would see that, considering that thinking through as patient endurance. You're taking the time to think through things, this patient endurance that comes along. Another word that we sometimes translate as endure, but we also translate as something else, is anexo, means to bear up and to endure. To bear up under pressure and to endure. And that's what James is talking about here. James recognizes his folks are living in a pressure cooker. And I think he's trying to deal with a logic that is beyond simply normal human response. I think also he's looking at the way, although Christ didn't always react, I think in the money changers, unless you go to the Gospel of John, it's the beginning, and he says he looked around and he sat down and he made a whip and then went in there, thought it through. But Jesus, in his righteous indignation at the end of his ministry, turned over the tables of the money changers. Seemingly irrational act. Especially with Roman soldiers standing around and all those other folks and the money changers, because everybody starts scarfing up the money. But James says here, the testing of your faith produces endurance. Well, does it always produce endurance? Not if we give in. And so a part of the testing of your faith for James is to think through. To at least pause for a moment and think it through. Joy is not necessarily our reaction to persecution, is it? Our reaction to trials. As Susan said a while ago, oh boy, a wreck. No. Another example of one that would find that is an ambulance-chasing lawyer. It's, oh, boy, another wreck. But the trials come. The trials come. And James says that if we think them through, if we consider them, then we might find joy. And so part of what we do here, and And what I know some of you got the book earlier than tonight, but it's to think through some of these questions and answer some of these questions either in your book or if you're sharing it with a spouse, maybe on another piece of paper. How difficult is it to find joy and to be trusting in the midst of trials and temptations and difficult circumstances? Think about, as one of the questions is, think about a recent trial or a recent temptation or a recent difficulty that you faced. What were your emotions? What were your reactions? What are they now that perhaps you're a day or a month away? How do we show joy and trust in God? In fact, the writer of the material says in this first section that joyful trust in God seeing us through trials is the main point. How do we get to that point? Can we get to that point? The writer of James says, consider these things. Think it through. Don't rely on feelings, but give consideration to what God has done, what God is doing, and what you hope God can and will do that will bring you joy. Surrendering to God. Interesting. We talk about surrender all the time, and that's one of those words that I've never really liked, is surrender. I guess because who likes to give up, right? There's always a part of me. I used to say to folks all the time, I had a fellow student one time, was in a Pentecostal church, and you got the Holy Spirit? Yeah. Oh, when did you start speaking in tongues? I don't. Well, then you don't have the Holy Spirit. We'd go on. Finally, one day he said, well, what are you going to do if someday God decides to give it to you? I said, I'm going to fight kicking and screaming all the way down the aisle. Because I don't want to give up. I don't want to give in. But surrender actually comes from the word paradidomi, which means to allow. To voluntarily allow. It's not that we finally give up in defeat to God. Okay. Well, I guess you've been beating me over the head long enough. I'll give this one up. But I'm not going to give up that one. No, it's to voluntarily give up. Do trials and temptations and difficulties ever get us to that point? Or do we give up most of the time because we feel worn out? The writer of James says that if we deal with this in faith, it builds up endurance. Not just endurance as in, to the point to where we fight it out, but endurance to the point where we have endured to the point where we understand that sometimes it is in voluntarily allowing God to do. Then we build up more endurance to do what? Voluntarily allow God to help us find that joy, even in the middle of the pressures. Yes. A joyful Jesus? I think Jesus was joyful around children. And when the children came to him, even though he said, allow the children to come to me, for such is the kingdom of God, I think he was joyful. I think there was a little bit of indignation, but I think he was joyful overall because he was of the point he was making there. I think that Jesus was probably, I think Jesus was joyful. Well, some of those, yes. Some of those, yes. I'm not sure he was very joyful when he told the parable of the wicked tenants right there at the beginning of the last week. And he said, the master is going to come and destroy those he gave it to begin with. Right. Yeah, he did that.
I think of one story that shows me joyful Jesus. And I see what you're saying about the just been pushing everybody up the side and say, suffer the children to come to me. You dumb dodo. You're keeping them from me. You know?
Well, I...
It's like, you're keeping the children from me. I want them here.
Well, and I think, but I see him as being happy when they are brought to him. Even though they've said that, he's joyful and he's saying, yeah, this is what the kingdom of God is like, and you too can be part of that and increase that joy.
When you were saying that, my brain
was
slipping through all the Bible.
Oh, I know. I think he was. Yeah. I think he was joyful for raising Lazarus. I think in the back of his mind he knew what was going to happen. Yeah, but the other place I was going to go was I think I would see Jesus as joyful with the Samaritan woman at the well, and the woman who had the flow of blood for 12 years and touched him, and she was scared to death. And I would see him as being gently joyful with her. When the guy got up and showed the faith and walked away, I think he would have been a little more miffed if the guy just said, well, how about help me up? No. But I think sometimes joyful is what might he be, not necessarily that he's jolly and laughing, but what might he be thinking and experiencing because he's helped this person be better. Okay. And see, Jesus never... In the Synoptic Gospels, especially in Mark, I mean, all these people faced pressures and trials and physical infirmities. And I think when Jesus healed them, even though sometimes it came back to bite him, I think he was joyful that that person showed faith. Jesus never heals anybody to elicit faith from the person he's healed in the Synoptic Gospels. You go and read every one of those stories, that person or the guys that tore the roof down and lowered him had already shown some belief in him, some faith in him, and he heals in response to that. And the woman with the Syrophoenician woman with her daughter, and he said, your faith has made your daughter well. So, well, you're my son and you, I'm well pleased. Might have been, or he might have thought, now I got to go out here and but I understand what you're saying because there he does have. Yeah, God was joyful. I'm not so sure. Yeah. We can't be there to see, but I really would think, especially with the woman at the well, and she runs and tells other people. I think Jesus would be joyful that she did that. No. Right. Well, and yeah, but I think you know, when he tells the woman. Who reaches out to touch him, and then she shrinks back, and he wants, and I think he's joyful at that point with her. But, yeah.
Well, he always had to correct the disciples. They were messing up all the time.
Well, I think that they needed to ponder anew.
And that was a lesson within itself, but yeah. It wasn't a smiley type lesson. But
no.
Still, you're not always real happy with him. You have to correct him and everything.
But yes, Jesus, people try to make Jesus out to be real namby-pamby a lot of times, and they forget that he turned over the tables. He said, "You, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, you're like whitewashed tombs." But he does. Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
But we're not, bubbling over everywhere we go.
Well, but does being joyful mean we always have to be bubbling over?
That's my question. No.
That's right. No. Yes, Debbie. Yeah, Debbie says no. And I want you to see how joyful she is about emphatically saying no. But, you know,
Well, I have tried to look at this and try to find joy in trial, and I know y'all are sick of hearing that, but when I do go to work and I do not want to be there, I still try to find myself saying, I am thankful, I am able, because there are so many people that are not able to even get out of bed and go to work. So, you know, that's the joy, puts the joy on it for me, that I'm able to do it. I may not want to do
right.
it, but I'm able to do it.
And for a moment, go ahead.
And if I can touch somebody's life while I'm here, then that gives me a point of joy, too, in the middle of that trial.
And I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth here, but and in that moment and in all of that, the pressure to do at least goes into the background because you found purpose. And all of that. So, oh no, I'm not joyful when the and it's not just driving the car either. There are other times, you know, I'm not overly joyful about some of the pressures. But what's the purpose of this? So that endurance will have its full effect, and we be mature and complete in nothing. Mature, complete. One of God's goals is for us to be mature and complete. Teleos. Theology has to do with fullness or the last, or not the last things, but has to do with completion or completeness in Greek. Teleos means mature, complete, or perfect. It means we've finished. What we're trying to do in this endurance is get to the point where this endurance and joy can make us mature and complete. Interesting thing is the word for perfect also is mature. Plerio means mature, perfect, or fully developed. In fact, the writer of Hebrews uses it a lot to speak of Jesus as the pioneer and perfecter of the faith. What that means is he was fully prepared and completely prepared to be the pioneer of that faith, to take us there. We also find in this, one writer says that when he's talking here, he's speaking of believers who stand firm when moral courage is required. This maturity, this perfection or completeness, believers who stand firm when moral courage is required. Rather than giving in to the affliction or the temptation, we find a way to stand firm, and in that we become more complete. We're more prepared to face the next difficulty. Lacking in nothing. Generally, and he goes on to talk about wisdom shortly hereafter, and many scholars see that lacking in nothing as the springboard to not lacking in wisdom, asking for the wisdom to be able to deal with these pressures in such a way that we can become more complete, that we can find, even in the middle of everything that goes on, a sense of joy. Paul writes in 1 Thessalonians 5, 16, 17, and 18, "Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God for you." What is the will of God for you? To rejoice always. I don't always feel like rejoicing, but that's what God desires for us to do. To pray constantly, building upon prayer, the rejoicing. To give thanks in all circumstances. To find a reason for thanksgiving, even if, among other things, I know it sounds kind of cheapening, but, well, thank God it's not worse. But to look for, to consider. Paul would agree with James here that we should consider, think through the situations, the trials and the temptations, and really not to look for always look for the negative side of it and how can I get out of it, but rather for some positive way to learn from it, to move through it. And therein is the rub in a pressure-filled world, pressure-filled lives. Therein is the difficulty, probably one of the greatest difficulties that I have, is finding why in the world did that happen? Why in the world did this go this way? Or why did I say that? And I know y'all wonder that sometimes too, probably more often than not. But dealing with the pressures and then finding a way to live it out, that's the difficulty. Looking for where God is walking with us and then finding ways to make that connection to a practical living. I know I'm butting up almost to choir practice time. Surprise. But I like the give and take. I like the questions. I do like, and I don't want to stifle that. I really want us to have more of that give and take and talk about these things. So when the pressure comes, James says we need to work at considering, thinking through, and finding out, is there a way in all of this that I can find some joy? And not the joy, not that kind of joy, but the joy that gives us peace even in the middle of the fast-moving stream.
I want to say that when you get through one time, you trust it or not, and you get you through it, and you still have joy. And when you have the next trial, you know, you can trust it, and you can do it.
Yes, it is. I mean, oh, I know. Well, there are times, and I know everybody's been there, times to say, you know, Lord, I don't need a dessert plate. I already got so much on my plate. I don't need a dessert plate. But that is, I mean, an endurance runner, you don't go out here and first time you run a marathon. You don't. Some of us don't even go out here first time to run a mile. Right? Yeah. You have to build up, and that puts pressure and trial, but that building up through that. You're right, Melissa. Thank you. And sometimes it's a matter of, do we trust in God or do we trust God? And with that, we will close this evening and read through the chapter. Think it through, answer some of the questions, and go ahead and read through the one for next week as well, so that perhaps our dialogue can be even more open and more lively than tonight. And I always promise to bring yellow sheets too. I don't know if that's yellow journalism, but that's what I write notes on all the time. I seem to have more little yellow notepads and yellow legal pads than I do white notepads and white legal pads.